am super excited to have one of my favorite daughters with me.
Your one favorite daughter with you.
This is Grace.
Hi.
And Grace is our currently 21-year-old. And she's home for Easter break. And we've just had a wonderful time together. She's getting back on the plane and flying back up to Reading today. She's about to graduate from her third year there. And I thought while she was home and I had the equipment set up, I would pull her in and just interview her and see what comes out of this conversation that could be a blessing to those of you that follow our podcasts and videos. So Grace is being a good sport here, and not really sure what all I'm going to ask her about, so this can be...
just going to roll with it.
Pretty spontaneous.
Yeah.
All right, so, you know, when I think of you, Grace, I think of just the journey that we've been on as a family. And when I wrote a recent book, God in Every Season, and if you haven't read that, this is a shameless plug for it. We would love for you to get the book and read it. Grace actually was a major editor for that book and made me sound even smarter than I am. But Grace is also a gifted writer herself. And anyway, I could, you know, when you talk about your kids, you can go on all kinds of rabbit trails. But speaking of the book, I write about how God really taught me a lot personally through the different seasons of raising my four daughters. Grace is the third oldest. And how their names correlated with the seasons that my soul was going through in my relationship with God. And I remember when I was pregnant with you, Grace, and Sean Bolts, very few people had heard of Sean Bolts back in that time, more than 21 years ago. And he happened to be visiting the church that we were visiting, and he had me stand up and prophesied over me and prophesied that the baby that was in my womb, because I was obviously very pregnant, that she was going to be so much of who you've grown to be with the Lord, and that you would have a relationship with the Lord that is set apart and that would encourage a lot of people. And I remember he called you our golden child. And I thought, am I going to have a blonde-haired baby? But you are the lightest hair of all four of the girls.
Coincidentally, it was pretty golden colored compared to my sister's.
So it's true, yeah.
It wasn't far off.
But unfortunately, as soon as her sisters heard about this golden child prophecy, then they, of course, remind her of that. Oh, you're the golden child. But it's true. There's been something that's golden about who you are and what you are and who you're maturing to be as a woman. And it's been a privilege to watch. But like gold tried in fire, you've had to go through some really difficult things. And so I thought I would just kind of draw out of you a little few highlights of things that you feel like God has put into your heart through the years and different things that you've been through. And one specific challenge that comes to mind, you were 11 or 12.
I think I was 11.
11 years old, and you'd been sick. You hadn't had a cold or anything. It was really bizarre. You had a backache, and your back was hurting. And I remember you had just a really light fever, and I kept taking you to the doctor over the course of a couple of weeks, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And long story short, what happened?
Well, I ended up, so I went to the doctor. I saw multiple people who were trying to figure out exactly what was wrong with me. And they did all of the regular tests and checks you're supposed to do. But then I just remember one night my fever spiked really high and it was hard for me to breathe. I was in so much pain from my back. Like all the symptoms just were really random and super weird. And so my parents took me to the ER and my left lung had filled up with fluid overnight. So it was like a really, they're calling it pneumonia, but they've never seen a case of pneumonia like this one.
She never had a cough. There was no cold.
Yeah. It was just really weird. It was actually so bizarre that the CDC was involved and they came and interviewed us to try and figure out, like, piece together what had happened. I think that they had concluded, like, not fully sure, but concluded that the beach vacation we had gone on a month or so ago, there had been some rare imported sand from another country that had this bacteria in it that only responds with certain blood types and certain people in just the right way if I were to inhale it or get it in a cut or something. It was a crazy situation, but I happened to be the right one. And so basically it was a bacterial pneumonia, and I was rushed to the ER. They weren't sure if I was going to make it. They did a surgery to drain the fluid out of my lung, and they gave me a ton of antibiotics. They were just kind of trying to figure out how to treat me because this was a really new, rare situation that they hadn't seen before.
They thought for a little while that it might be the MRSA bacteria that's not treatable with antibiotics. So it was really scary.
Yeah.
And you were in the hospital for, you know, almost weeks. 2 weeks, and then on the most potent antibiotics that were available at the time through an IV that she had to go home
IVs. With. Yeah, I had a few IVs line. And then they put in a PICC line, which is like a more permanent weeks. IV. Yeah. I think it's like a tube that threads through your vein to your heart so that you don't hurt your vein.
Yeah. And it was extremely painful and just very traumatic for all of us, but especially for you. And so when you think back about that time and where you are now with the Lord, how did that experience play into just what you have with him now?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I grew up a pastor's kid. I don't ever remember not knowing the Lord or not having a relationship with Jesus. But I think at a certain point in everyone's life, you kind of need to choose him for yourself and know why you're choosing him so that later down the road you don't all of a sudden question, this is just my normal, but I never question why, and I don't actually have ownership over my relationship with the Lord. Mm. So for me, that was really significant, it actually happening at such a young age, because I always loved the Lord, but at 11 years old, I think I kind of felt the gravity of what it looked like to choose the Lord and to actually not just take it because my parents taught it to me, but because this is my only option. This is who I choose. This is what my world revolves around. And I just was aware of the gravity of that, you know, being in the hospital, being fully dependent on the Lord. And I don't think I really thought about, will I die or will I live? I just knew that I was at like the lowest point. I couldn't imagine feeling any worse. And I was like, I don't have any answers. I don't know how to get out of this. So I just remember the kindness of the Lord meeting me in the hospital room and supernatural things happening even in the midst of me being really sick and me going through a lot of hard, painful situations. Like when they inserted the tube into my lung, I had it in me while I was awake for like 3 days, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
And then they, a few days. And then they pulled it out when I was all done with the procedure, but they take it out while you're still awake. And the tube, apparently, what I've heard is it's supposed to be one of the most painful feelings is to have it taken out because all that skin is raw and it's all the way to your lung. It's supposed to be really painful. Well, I remember them taking it out and that part not hurting at all. So to me, I was just like, God is totally here. His angels were all around. I was just so, I couldn't see them, but I felt an awareness in my spirit. And I can't even explain it to you because no one told me those things. Yeah. I just knew it.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to the Lord in my head and just being like, you really are my only option here. And I don't feel like I'm ever, you know, when you're sick for so long, you kind of feel like you're never going to feel well again and you forget what it feels like to feel good.
Yeah.
So you're just, it feels kind of like hell. Like you're just like, how do I get out of here? What is the point? Like, why is life this way? I can't ever do anything except lay in a hospital bed or in a bed at home. So I was just feeling really low. But yeah, feeling God's presence in my hospital room at some of the most traumatic points was, I can't even explain how, like, I'm thankful now, and I wouldn't have changed anything looking back, because that for me is what made me see him as a savior, which is what he is in my life. You know, that's why I follow him. That's why I have a relationship with him and experiencing his grace. And so since then, like, I just remember that was when I had an awareness of what trust is. And that's, I heard him in my mind say, you know, you have to trust me, you have to trust me. And I had the sense, like, he wasn't just talking about this particular situation. Right. It was like a seed he was planting that was going to keep growing. Wow. Obviously, everyone is on their own journey with trust and trusting the Lord. So I remember hearing that at 11 years old and not really knowing what trust was, because it feels very abstract. Yeah. Kind of like when people say, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed. Well, I would get so confused by that when I was a kid. I was like, do I have faith? Because I can't see it. I feel it, I think, but I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think I trust the Lord. I mean, I don't know how to tell.
Yeah.
I just trust him. So it started with an abstract idea, and then the Lord began to grow me from that point into understanding, like, trust looks like something, and the evidence of trust is in your life. The evidence of trust is surrender. It's full surrender to the Lord. So his journey in teaching me that, I just remember him, like, teaching me through parables in the Bible, so I could understand it as I was growing up, because it really didn't make sense to me. Like, this one specific parable was when Jesus was walking on water, and he called to the disciples when the waves were rolling, and he called to Peter, and Peter went out on the water and walked to him. And as long as Peter kept his eyes on the Lord, he could walk on the water. But the minute that he stopped to look around at the water, and he was, like, aware of how impossible the situation was that he was in, and how it didn't make sense at all, essentially the mystery, he would sink. But if he kept his eyes on the Lord and he didn't keep in mind the impossibility of what he was doing, and he just chose to fully focus on the Lord, he could keep walking on water. So the Lord kind of explained that to me in my 11, 12-year-old brain. You know, if you keep your eyes on me, if you keep your heart set on me, and you don't look at the impossibilities of whatever situation you're in, because I've had more impossible situations since then come up, of this makes no sense. I don't know how this is going to work out. Yeah. I haven't done anything in my power to move the right pieces to make this situation come out okay. You know, it'll be a winter season, and I'm like, I honestly don't know how I'm going to progress out of this. But if I keep my eyes on him, and if I have expectancy and hope, and I cling to the goodness of God, who I know him to be, then I'm going to be able to keep going. And then I look back at the situation that I walked out of, and I can see the evidence of the supernatural thing that happened. I can see I just walked on water. That makes no sense.
Right.
But it doesn't matter, because he led me out of it. And then I grew my spiritual muscles walking through that. So that seed that he planted in me when I was sick in the hospital, the trust seed is growing, and I'm nurturing it every day with every situation that comes since then. So for me,
I have witnessed you do that.
Thank you. For me, it feels really rewarding to look at what I'm watering and, like, what I'm stewarding over in my life, and see every impossible situation that comes up gets a little bit less difficult. Either that, or I can go to the next level of an impossible situation. And I think that looks like favor. I think that looks like grace. It looks like him trusting me with more things, because trust goes both ways. He's a relational God. So it's exciting for me to kind of watch that be elevated and see, oh my gosh, you're trusting me with this moment right now. You're trusting me with this person in my life, or this exciting opportunity. So, yeah, that's kind of
Even trusting you with another challenge, another difficult situation. So this is all so good. And, of course, those of you that are parents, you know, like, sitting here as a mom, listening to you share your heart, I just so respect where you've allowed God to take you in your relationship with Him and what that means for you in your life. So in God in Every Season, one of the chapters, one of the four seasons that I talk about is the summer season, mm-hmm. Summer Grace. Grace Victoria is her middle name. And so I talk about how God showed me that in a quote summer season of our soul in our relationship with Him is when we've gone through the winter, we've gone through those challenges, we've gone through the spring where something begins to come alive in us and we realize, wow, we're going to bear fruit and there is hope for mm-hmm. things taking on new meaning and mm-hmm. and then we're in this season of summer. And summer, in the way that I present the revelation of the book, is that summer is a season of testing and tending to what we've birthed. You know, you imagine a field in the summertime. It's got the scorching heat on it. You've got to keep that thing weeded and watered and keep the animals from eating the plants that are going to eventually bear fruit. Mm-hmm. And so it's that testing place, and it's in the testing where gold, my golden child, is tried by fire, and it's where you come out stronger. And it's also the season, all seasons ultimately are about us growing in the knowledge of who God is and mm-hmm. what He's really like, not what circumstances tell us, but mm-hmm. but who He really is. And the summer season is where our trust really develops. And I love that you just talked all into that. So I know that you've had to, as you said, tend to and water and nurture that seed of trust. And I saw you do it even when we, came to you girls and we said, God has spoken to us that we're not going to pastor our church anymore. We're going to raise up new leaders. This is when we lived in Atlanta. We're now in California. And you were about, how old were you? About 15, 16?
I think I was either 16 or about to turn 16.
So, you're in a school that you loved. You had friends you were so close to. You were mm-hmm. really in a great groove with yeah. life as a teenage girl. And, you might not have been real sad that we said we're not going to pastor anymore, but what came next is, and we're going to move to the other side of the country, and you're going to start all over again in a new school for your junior and senior year. So that, again, was a test for your heart. And mm-hmm. and do you want to talk into that kind of where you were during that time and your
yeah.
processing?
So, as she says in her book, the natural seasons of life, you just start to notice patterns and you can kind of sense, okay, this is the beginning of a challenge and I can choose to like hunker down and embrace it. But you don't actually have to be miserable as a Christian going through seasons. If you actually tap into insight from the Lord and I would ask the Lord to give me perspective from His eyes, because I could only see from my own perspective. Mm-hmm. And for me, I felt really discouraged and I was like, why do I have to leave all of my friends yeah. I just made? I finally found a school where I just come alive. It was a conservatory of the arts school, so I was getting into acting and singing and just getting to be really creative. And I had a bunch of really close, amazing friends, but I was only 15, 16. So for me at that age, it felt like, oh my gosh, this is my whole world. I'm going to live in Georgia forever, and I'm yeah. going to settle down and get married, and I'm never going to leave. So like I just had a really traditional view of life, and I just was enjoying, just being 15 and in that season. And then when they said that we were going to move, my first thought was, there's no way we're going to move. I was just shocked. Mm. It didn't hit me. And yeah, I wasn't even thinking long term what that would mean. I was just in that moment thinking, oh my gosh, I have to say goodbye to my friends. I have to leave this school.
Yeah. So we get here. It was a process. Mm-hmm. It took about a year from once we told y'all, and then we got here and got settled. And it's your junior year of high school, and we decided to homeschool that year. And so you basically just did your own work. And to help you and your younger sister Glory make a connection with other teenagers, we tried something new, and y'all auditioned and got on a competitive cheer team. Mm-hmm. So here you are, you're finally making new friendships and exploring this whole world of you know, for the first time in your life, not being in a Christian school or setting.
It was a bit of a culture shock. Like, moving from Georgia to Southern California alone is a culture shock, not even counting friends and school and all of that. So,
and I would say that you quickly rose to the top in that setting, that those younger girls, because you were one of the older ones on your cheer team, and this is competitive cheer where it's super intense, and it is definitely a sport. And you know, you've got these younger girls interacting with you and looking up to you, and y'all are maybe halfway through the competitive season, and you got injured.
Yeah, so I ended up, we actually don't know if I fractured my back or not because of what happened. So there was a girl up in a stunt. I'll try to explain this so it makes sense to everyone, but she was basically at the highest level you can go, and she started falling backwards, and at the angle she was falling, it looked like she was going to land on her neck, and that's not good. And I was her back spot, which means I was the one watching her from behind and holding her up from behind, so it's my job to catch her and break her fall. But unfortunately, my bases were taller than me, so she's going to fall over me. So I reached back to try to catch her, and my back hyperextended, overarched, and when her weight fell on me, it overextended and it popped like 5 times. It was terrible. It hurt so badly, but my coach is just used to stunts falling, so he wasn't really thinking anyone got injured. So he's like, keep going, keep going. So I did keep going for like a month, and I didn't know what was wrong at first. We thought that I just threw my back out because it was fine if I just stood up straight, but if I tried to arch my back at all, it was excruciatingly painful. So
here you were injured.
Yeah.
You had to basically quit the team, and I, you know, as a mom, it was, not to cut the story short, but we're running out of time, and I just remember as a mom, like, again, what it's so hard to watch your kids go through these challenges where they, you know, they're questioning, and you were older, so you're able to even tell us, like, I just don't know why God brought us out here, and this
it felt like I kept hitting walls, like, even with friends, because
yeah,
I don't know necessarily that the girls really looked up to me. I think I was a bit of a question mark to them because I was fresh out of Georgia. I had a really strong Southern accent, and they were more like
California girls.
Well, yeah, but they were more found me entertaining, I think, than I look up to you, which is not what I was looking for. I was more shy back then, and a bit, I was kind of kept to myself because mm-hmm. of where I was and trying to kind of stay alive. So they would always like, oh, say this word, because they thought it was cute how I was talking. And they were so sweet, but I would say it was pretty surface level there, and I wasn't really thinking about being influential or, you know. So going there with the Lord and hitting wall after wall from I'm trying to see from your perspective, but I can't. And just choosing to trust him anyways, because I, once again, I had no other option. The other option was just to be hopeless or to go and move back to Georgia.
With God.
Or to get bitter. Yeah.
Yeah.
So instead I just persevered, and I was like, I remember this school assignment we had was to write a poem. So the Lord started speaking to me as I was writing this poem about California. And basically I just kind of wrote my feelings out on the page, and it was started kind of angry, but then it was therapeutic. It ended with me being like, I know you're going to make this my home. I know that you've called me here, and I didn't want to come here myself. So I know that it's not from a selfish place or a wrong perspective. And I know that you are going to transform this and transform my heart to love this place and to take ownership over it. And he just kind of prophetically spoke to me as I was writing this poem. And I didn't even realize what was happening. But then when I finished it and I read it, I was like, I feel hopeful. Like, yeah. He just, so if you are training your eyes to look for him, he does show up. Even when it's hard for you to see, even when you're trying to see, he shows up and puts his face in every chance he get. His kindness just chases you down. And it's in those winter seasons that you actually get to see sides of him that you know in summertime and in autumn, but you don't really, they mean more to you, and you kind of see, oh, you're a really good parent because you're showing up for me above and beyond what I could have asked for.
Yeah.
He just left me surprises all the time and just gave and gave and gave and showed how much he loved me. You know, he just chased me down, honestly. So wow. Getting to look back now and kind of put those pieces together, it just affirms me even more in what I'm doing and where I'm going and any opposition that I feel like I'm facing. So every victory really is another building brick in your life and in your destiny and where you're going, what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I would love for you to just pray over people, just pray into this issue of trust. We can all relate to it. And every single person that's listening has areas that they're having to trust God in that they didn't plan for. I frequently find myself thinking or saying, I did not sign up for this. This was not in the plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all have those areas and they become opportunities for trust to go deeper. So if you would just pray over them, that would be awesome. And we might get her back for a part two on this.
All right. Oh, Jesus, I just ask that you would let your presence fill whatever room any viewer is right now, that they would feel your tangible presence.
Yep.
They would feel your love, that you would expand everyone's capacity to receive your love right now. God, I thank you for every person's yes. And I thank you for the price that they're paying to give you that yes, but it's so valuable. And God, I ask that every yes that you are given, that you would just go above and beyond what they could ask, think, or imagine, that I just bless everyone's finances. I bless whatever kind of season they're in, Lord. I ask that they would prosper, that you would take them to greater places than they could ever imagine, like you did with me and my family. Thank you, Lord, that we didn't have vision for what you were doing, but you did, and you took our yes and you put us there. So I ask for divine placement and divine intervention in everyone's life, that you would continue to plant that seed of trust in our hearts, Lord, and grow it and nurture it with your kindness and your love. Yeah. And God, I just thank you that your perfect love casts out all fear. So any kind of nervousness or any kind of unsettling about the season of winter, any kind of misconceptions, I ask that you would just blow those away and you would reveal your face and reveal your kindness, and that there is so much sweetness no matter what place in life we are, that everyone would just know your sweetness, your kindness, and your goodness, Father. God.
Yes, Father. Amen.